9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Vladimir Putin signals no end in sight to Russia's war in Ukraine. Plus, U.S. stocks rally in spite of a profit margin pinch. And Google heads to the U.S. Supreme Court to defend a key pillar of the online economy.
What's at stake here is the use of recommendation algorithms. That could really produce some big changes in the way that social media platforms work.
It's Tuesday, February 21st. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. In a major speech this morning, nearly a year after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Russian President Vladimir Putin dismissed any blame for the war and announced that Moscow was suspending participation in the New START Treaty for the Control of Nuclear Weapons. I spoke with our Moscow bureau chief, Anne Simmons, about Putin's message.
In this highly anticipated address to his country's federal legislature, Mr. Putin basically castigated the West and said that the West was to blame for this war, that the West had triggered this war. In fact, he said that the West had let the genie out of the bottle. The address was interesting because he also appeared to be trying to rally public support for the military campaign by pledging several social welfare packages. But the main message here was really that the West is to blame for this war. Russia will not give up. Russia is in this for the long term, and Russia will not abandon its people in the face of this conflict.
And Anne, Putin also said that he would suspend cooperation on a key nuclear weapons control treaty with the United States. What should we make of that?
This is pretty significant because obviously this treaty dates back. It's one that prevents in many ways the escalation of any kind of nuclear war. And with Russia deciding to suspend that, it does not send a very good signal.
That was Wall Street Journal Moscow bureau chief Anne Simmons. Meanwhile, President Biden is set to give an address in Warsaw, Poland today as Russia steps up an offensive in eastern Ukraine and Ukrainian officials brace for other major Russian moves tied to the one-year mark of the war. The long-planned trip to Eastern Europe took on added gravity Monday after Biden unexpectedly stopped in Kyiv, where he met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and toured part of the city during air raid warnings. White House aides said that Biden's speech is expected to highlight his bond with Ukraine's leaders, underscore the U.S. commitment to aiding Ukraine, and showcase a united allied front against Russian aggression. Separately, the U.S. and its allies are preparing to increase efforts to enforce sanctions against Russia, threatening to hit foreign companies that are helping Moscow to evade economic restrictions. In a speech today, U.S. Deputy Treasury Secretary Wally Adeyemo is expected to say that Russia is making an all-out effort to evade Western sanctions and that the U.S., the EU, and Group of Seven allies are prepared to use sanctions, export controls, and other tools to pressure foreign companies to stop aiding the Kremlin. In a separate call with reporters Monday, Adeyemo said the U.S. would go directly to Chinese companies and banks and make it clear to them they will face sanctions for providing support to Russia. Global banking giant HSBC has reported a sharp rise in its fourth quarter profit, driven by higher interest rates. The bank said that profit more than doubled to $4.6 billion over the final 3 months of last year compared to a year earlier, beating analyst estimates. HSBC is in the middle of a broad restructuring as it reduces its presence in North America and parts of Europe while investing more in Asia and the Middle East. The bank is likely to benefit this year from further reopening of China's economy. A strong earthquake struck southern Turkey and Syria last night, causing buildings to collapse and killing at least 6 people, Turkish officials said, in a fresh sign of the region's vulnerability after it suffered its worst seismic event in decades earlier this month. Monday night's magnitude 6.4 earthquake was followed by several tremors and was felt as far away as Egypt and Lebanon. And on deck for today, U.S. retail giants Walmart and Home Depot will join crypto exchange Coinbase and medical device maker Medtronic in reporting their quarterly earnings, while data on January U.S. existing home sales is due out from the National Association of Realtors. Fourth quarter earnings season is nearly complete, and while stocks have staged a rally so far this year, that rally is being characterized by a surprising feature: eroding profit margins at big U.S. companies. And here now to help us look at this trend is Wall Street Journal markets reporter Caitlin McCabe. Hey, Caitlin.
Hey, Luke. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So paint a picture of what is going on here, if you could. How is it that stocks are rallying even though their profitability is being squeezed?
Yeah, this has definitely been an unusual feature of this year's stock market. We've seen the S&P 500 rise a little bit more than 6% this year based on Friday's close, but we've seen the net profit margins of companies in the S&P 500 fall 11.3%, which is the sixth consecutive quarter that we've seen declines, according to FactSet. And we're seeing profits being squeezed in large part because of rising costs on everything from labor to materials to energy. And that's coming even as sales are rising. And, you know, this is really sharply different than during the pandemic when profit margins swelled well above historical norms, in large part because of unprecedented stimulus and also because consumer spending really bounced back after lockdowns lifted in the pandemic. Now I think the economic picture is a bit more uncertain, but yet for most of the year until the last couple weeks, we've seen stocks rally, and that's largely because of the macroeconomic backdrop. You know, investors kicked off 2023 expecting the Fed to cut interest rates later this year, and so I think we've seen that shift in the last couple weeks where investors are expecting the Fed to take rates higher and for longer. So that is weighing on investors, and then combined with profitability being squeezed, I think that's a key reason why we've seen stocks pause their rally in the last few weeks.
And what could this signal going forward, these eroding profit margins?
Yeah, I mean, I think for one, this is just another headache that investors are contending with in addition to interest rates, as I mentioned earlier. And I think falling profits worry investors specifically because they can signal a few things. They can signal an economic slowdown. They can leave companies strapped for cash. And that could lead to less spending on new corporate projects or crimp how much investors receive in terms of dividends, or might restrict companies from doing stock buybacks. We've seen investors take different strategies to try to contend with this. We've seen some investors switching to small cap stocks. We've seen some investors saying that they've favored stocks and sectors where cost pressures that previously built up have eased a little bit. That's things like home builders and consumer staples companies. But other investors say this pace of sequential margin compression could signal a recession, and that's made them quite worried.
That was Wall Street Journal markets reporter Caitlin McCabe. Caitlin, thank you for the update.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments today in a case that could challenge the so-called Magna Carta of the Internet, a law known as Section 230. We'll look at what the case could mean for social media companies and speech on the Internet after the break.
Rapid expansion?
We're ready.
Worker shortage?
We're good.
Anything can change the world of work.
A celebrity buys the company.
Depends on who it is. But relax, we've got ADP.
From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
Google is set to appear today before the U.S. Supreme Court to defend what is widely regarded as a pillar of the online economy, a law known as Section 230. And Wall Street Journal tech policy reporter John McKinnon says that depending on how the court rules, it could potentially scramble the business models of the Internet's giants. And John joins us now with the details on what is at stake in this case. Hey, John, thanks for being with us.
Sure. You're welcome.
Give us a quick refresher on Section 230. It's been a while since we've talked about it here.
Yes, sure. So Section 230 basically gives internet platforms immunity for almost all kinds of lawsuits over the content that they host on their platforms. So any kind of harm that's done by any of those posts, they're essentially off the hook for. And this was part of a bill that was passed in 1996, basically at the dawn of the internet age. And now a lot of people are questioning whether basically tech companies still need this kind of protection.
And how does this case involve Section 230 exactly?
Well, the lawsuit was brought against Google by the family of a college student who was killed in the 2015 terror attacks in Paris. And the lawsuit alleges that YouTube failed to remove videos that were posted by ISIS, and also that Google, through YouTube, essentially promoted the videos through its algorithm that makes recommendations for people who are using the site.
I'd imagine this case has been bubbling up from lower courts. John, what arguments have we seen from both sides throughout that process?
Well, Google, you know, immediately said, well, we're protected by Section 230 because basically this lawsuit is over the videos that ISIS posted. And so far, they've been successful with that argument, that they've won in the lower courts, arguing that they're protected by Section 230. What the plaintiffs are saying is that, no, this is not quite a Section 230 case, because what we're really complaining about is the fact that Google recommended these videos, not that they were just hosted on the site. And they're saying that that's different from hosting the material, and therefore it's not protected by Section 230. So that's the essence of the argument.
Are the plaintiffs in this case being joined by others?
The plaintiffs are being joined by many others, and also Google is being joined by many, many others. This has turned into a real big controversy for the internet industry. And so there were almost 80 friend of the court briefs that had been filed in the case. Most of them side with Google, but a lot of them also side with the plaintiffs.
And John, what are the likely ways that this case could play out, and what effect would those outcomes have for companies like Google?
I think there's pretty widespread agreement that any decision substantially in favor of the plaintiffs is going to have big impacts on the internet industry. Basically, what's at stake here is the use of recommendation algorithms. And if those are no longer protected by Section 230, then that could really produce some big changes in the way that social media platforms work. Recommendation algorithms have become more and more popular. You look at a platform like TikTok, for instance, it basically just runs on recommendation algorithms. That's essentially what it is. And so there's a lot at stake here for the social media industry. On the other hand, the plaintiffs and their allies say that, you know, Congress has tried and tried to deal with what are widely regarded as the sort of excesses of Section 230, and Congress has not been able to do anything. So they increasingly look at this case and cases like this as the sort of best hope they have for changing 230 and kind of, you know, restoring some balance to the industry.
And finally, what kind of timeline are we looking at with this case? When might we receive a decision?
Like all cases before the U.S. Supreme Court, it's a little hard to predict when the decision will come out, but usually they try to have a decision out by the time their term ends, which is typically in late June or early July. But, you know, it's possible it could come out sooner than that.
That was Wall Street Journal tech policy reporter John McKinnon. John, thank you as always for the update.
You bet.
And finally, there has been a lot of talk about how the food that you eat and your digestive system could affect your mental health. Back in December, we shared some news here about a set of studies that showed a link between the bacteria in your gut and depression. And now researchers are exploring possible ways to turn those links into treatments. John Cryan, who studies the connection between the brain and the gut at University College Cork in Ireland, told our Future of Everything podcast that treatments may not be that far off.
And I would think within the next 3 to 5 years, we could be able to get targeted microbial advice to say, you know what? Your microbes 6 months ago were a lot better. Your mood was a lot better. Maybe we need to do something here. And maybe if you take this medication, it may not be good for your microbiome. Maybe we should try that one because that has less effects on your microbiome.
You can hear much more about the gut-brain connection on our sister podcast, The Future of Everything. And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.